Today's share in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Yevamos Daf Kuf, and we are going to begin 14 lines down from the top of Kuf Omer Aleph. But let's just chazer over yesterday. We had a brisa that was in the bottom of Tzadi Tesam Beis, where we said there were Asara in Cholkalem Truma Beis Agranos. There were 10 types of people that we do not give Truma in the Beis Agranos, albeit some of them we do send to their houses. But we don't give it to them in the Beis Agranos. So we went through a list of these 10 and why it was so. Just want to catch up. But there are a couple of interesting short tosas on the bottom of Tzadi Tesam and Beis that will help us remind us about yesterday's share, as well as teach us some new information. So in the first tosos, im Eved Kohen ani tnuli bishvil Rebbe, if I'm the Eved, we had the mixture of the Kohen and his Eved. So he says, if I'm the Eved, then give it to me based upon the fact that it's my master that you're giving it to. So he brings down Hikshu Rabbeinu Elchanan, and we discussed yesterday, the reason is because maybe she'll become nisgarish, she'll be divorced and no longer be allowed to eat truma as the wife of a Kohen. She's not a bas Kohen herself. And as a result, she's going to mistakenly be given truma and she'll eat the truma. So there we say, we don't give it to the woman because of concern, she's a grusha. Why don't we say over here, we don't give it to the Eved? There's a concern that maybe he was a freed person and now he's taking it inappropriately because he's a Yisrael. He's now an Eved Meshuchar, becomes a Yisrael, and he's no longer entitled to eat truma. So Tosus points out an interesting thing. The Re says that in Lachush Lekach, we don't have to be concerned about this, because then he would basically, if he's falsely saying that he's still an Eved, nobody would want to say that. It's much better to be a free person and not be able to eat Truma than to be an Eved, albeit you'd be allowed to eat Truma. Shal Yachzik Atzmo will be Eved, that's an overriding principle. Furthermore, we don't say that maybe he sold him to another Yid, so no longer, he's still an Eved, but he's no longer the Eved of a Kohen, he's the Eved of a Yid, so in this situation, why would he go and cheat? Because he's not getting any benefit from it. His master is supposed to provide him with food. And therefore, in this situation, we have another principle, ein odem chote v'lo lo. A person wouldn't go and sin for the benefit of somebody else. So here, he's only benefiting his master by taking the truma, so his master doesn't have to feed him, who's a Yisrael now, and therefore, there's no reason to think that he would go and lie or say that he's still the Eved of a Kohen if he's the Eved of a Yisrael. Then, the next Tosos, he brings down that we talked about, Reb Pinchas ben Yair's donkey wouldn't sin, so he said, certainly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't allow a mistake to occur with a great tzaddik. So Tosos points out that we're not goris this. He says, because you're not dealing here with a person eating something mistakenly. He was just making a mistake. It doesn't say anywhere that tzaddikim can't make a mistake. And therefore, Tosos says, we're not goris this thing. It's only with achila are the tzaddikim protected, because if Pinchas ben Yair's donkey was protected from eating something inappropriate, certainly a tzaddik is going to be protected from eating something inappropriate. But there's no guarantee that for other things, such as saying a testimony, as we brought down yesterday, Elazar Ratzadok gave a testimony that could have led an Eved to be considered a Kohen, there's no guarantee that that wouldn't occur. The next Tosus, it says, Zecheri Shotu V'Kotten, they also aren't given truma at the granary, at the silo. So Tosus points out that depends on the age of the katan. If the katan is old enough to duchen, even though he's a katan, he can duchen with his father, so then we do give such a kohen truma by the granary. But if he's younger than that, we don't. And Tosus points out that if the young kohen, and this is minhag ha'olam, the young boys, they go up with their father to duchen, but they only go up when they're a katan if their father is there. They don't just go up on their own. Once they reach the age of bar mitzvah and have the shtei saros, so then they're halachically allowed to go up on their own and duchen by themselves. And finally, the last tosos, the chulon mishagrin levotein. So Tosus says, why do we send to the house of the Cheresh and Shotav? They're not going to be able to properly protect it. So why would we don't give it to them in the granary because it's a zilusa of the truma. But if you send it to the house, it's also going to lead to a zilusa of the truma. They're not going to know how to watch it properly. They'll make it tame, they'll ruin it, etc. So Tosus explains, no, in the house there's always an apotropos. As opposed to, even though the apotropos may sometimes be with them at the granary, so therefore, one could argue you could give it to him over there, but sometimes they won't have the apotropos with them. The apotropos is always in the house. He's always running the house to make sure that the house is running smoothly. But not Lav Davka will be at the granary, so therefore we don't send it to them at the granary, but we do send it to them in the house. So that's just a couple of interesting things to finish up from yesterday's shir to get us into the mood for today's shir. And now we begin on Kuf Omud Aleph, 14 lines from the top with the words Tanu Rabbanan. Tanu Rabbanan, Ha'eved V'Yisha in Cholkin Lem Truma B'Veis Agranos. Both the Eved and the Isha, we don't give to them truma in the Beis Agranos. That's what we learned yesterday in the other Braisa, and here we repeat it today. Now, Ubamakum Shecholkim, but in places where you do give it to them, Nosdin La'isha Trila, Upochin usamiyat. We give the woman first and get her out of there as fast as possible because we want her not to be there with all the other men. Now, the Gemara asks the obvious question. My comrade, what in the world did you just say? First you say, we don't give it to them. And then you say, and in places where you do give it to them, give the woman first. As Rashi points out in Dibro Masal, my comrade, first you say, we don't give it to the Evan or to the woman. And then you say, but in the place where you do, we in fact give it to the woman first. So the Gemara answers, Hochi comrade, this is what this price is telling us. It's not talking about truma. It's two separate statements. We don't give truma to women and to Eved in the granary. Fine. That's the first statement. And this is based upon what we said yesterday. There were two reasons that we brought down. There's a chashad of maybe she's a grusha, and there's a chashad of yichud. And therefore, for both of those reasons, that's why we don't give it to the woman in the granary. And for the Eved, because, again, we brought down that in certain places, if you gave it to the Eved in the granary, so then that would establish that he was a Kohen. Only Kohanim got in the granary, and therefore, it would be a problem. Now, some of the Forshim point out that in some times, as we brought down the end of Yeshiva, what's the difference between the opinion that says we're concerned about Yichud with the woman, the opinion that says we're concerned that she's a Grusha, so we brought down, depending on where the granary was. If the granary was near the city, so everybody would know that she was a grusha there, so that's not a concern. But there may not be a lot of people over there, so therefore there's a concern of yichud, and vice versa. If it's a place where there are a lot of people going, but it's far away from the town, and therefore there's no knowledge that she's a grusha, so that's what the ikar b'nai we said yesterday. But the mafarshim should point out there might be situations where there is no concern of yichud and there is no concern of grusha, and the Gemara could have given that answer. But in any event, the Gemara is telling us that we're dealing over here with meiser oni. So where we say that we give it to the woman first over the man, is we're dealing with meiser oni. No silisha tchila. Why? My time up. Mishum zilusa. Because it's pasnish for the woman to have to wait there amongst all the men while the men are first getting the meiser oni funds. Now, Rashi points out that this is given out normally in the house, so there is no concern about yichud because there are always people about. And likewise, there is no concern here of grusha because a grusha is allowed to take ma'aser ani. So therefore, those two concerns don't apply, and therefore we can give it to the woman in the ma'aser ani funds, and we give it to her first. Tosus points out sometimes the ma'aser ani funds are not given out of the house, sometimes they're given out the granary, and in that situation, you'd only give it to the woman over there in the house because we would have the other concern about yichud possibly in that situation. Okay, now, the Gemara continues and says, Amar Rava, Rava says, Mereisha, l'chatchil originally, ki havu osu gabra, v'isis oledino kamoi, originally, before I learned this sugya, I thought the halach should be that if a man came to me to judge his case, and separately, a woman came to him to judge a different case. So we have two litigants in front of me, not in the same litigation. You have a man with his baal din and a woman with her baal din. So I thought originally, havasharina tigra de gavra bereisha, I mean the mechayivus of mitzvos. I said, let me judge the man first, because he's busy. He has a lot of mitzvos to do, whereas the woman doesn't have as many mitzvos to do. So if I have to push off one, I thought it would be more preferable to push off the woman, because the man is more mitzvos, and therefore I thought I would take care of his din first, adjudicate that case, and then we would deal with the woman. However, kivan the shemana loha, once I heard this din over here, that when the ani is a woman, I give it to her first, the ma'aser ani funds, rather than give it to the man, first take care of the woman, so therefore, sharina tigra the issa. Likewise, I decided that it makes more sense to judge the woman first for the same reason, my time, woman shum zilusa, because it's pastish for the woman to have to wait around while they're adjudicating the other case. Adjudicate the woman's case first, let her get out of there. Call kvuda bas melech penima. It's not proper for the woman to have to be around in that public display, in that public situation. Okay. Then we quote the Mishnah and said, Higdilu atarov zuchulei. Remember from yesterday's share, we said that if we had the Kohen and the Eved, so they were mixed up at birth and they were hidden away and they don't know which one is the child of the Kohen and which one is the child of the Eved of the Kohen. So in that situation, Higdilu hatarovis v'chule. When they grow older, there was a number of things that we did, including that they free each other. Whichever one is the Kohen says to the other one, if I'm the Kohen, I'm freeing you. And the other one says, if I'm the Kohen, I'm freeing you. So therefore, the bottom line is that the Eved is now Eved Meshuchur. So Gemara says, Shichrur implies Iboy in, Iloboy lo. From the Lashon of the Mishnah, it said that they can go and free each other, and therefore that implies that if they wish to free each other, fine. If not, said, listen, they like to leave the status quo the way it is. We have certain benefits from the status quo, so we'll leave it the way it is. So how are they allowed to do that? Bamai, as we pointed out yesterday, Lisa Shivcha in Yochel, Bascharid in Yochel. To marry a Shivcha, they can't, because the Kohen part of them would, the one that's the Kohen, would not be allowed to marry the Shivcha. So both of them have to treat themselves with the Chumrah of being a Kohen. So neither of them can marry a Shivcha, even though one of them, the Eved, could. And to marry a Bas Chorin, to marry a regular woman who's Kshera, to marry a Kohen, so that's great for the Kohen, but the Eved isn't allowed to marry a Kosher Yid. So therefore, in this situation, we have a problem. They can't get married. So how can you tell me that if they wish to, they can free the slave? If they don't wish to, they don't have to free the slave. That's going to lead to tremendous takala. They can't get married to anybody. So Amar Rava, Rava says, you're right. Amar, read the Mishnah. Kofen Osan, Umshachu Zelzeh. Yeah, we forced them to go and have the Kohen free the Eved of the Kohen. So this way, they'll be able to go get married. The Mishnah again, it says, Nos de Naleim Chumri V'chulei. It says that in this situation, now you have an Eved Meshuchra, so he's like a regular Yisrael, and you have the Kohen. We don't know again which one is which. So here we have to take upon ourselves the chumras of both. They have to take upon themselves the chumras of a Kohen, so that's clear and easy. We know what the chumras of a Kohen are, but what does it mean that they take upon themselves the chumras of being a Yisrael? L'mai Hilchasa. What nafkamina, what practical ramification does that have? After all, doesn't a Kohen have every chumra that a Yisrael has? So Omer Rapapa tells us no. This is a din in regards to bringing a carbon mincha. There are differences between a Yisrael bringing a carbon mincha and a Kohen bringing a carbon mincha. And that is, a carbon mincha that's brought by a Yisrael has to have kmitza done to it. Kmitza is a difficult process. We learned this in the Gemara in Yuma and in many other places, that you take the three middle fingers, excluding the thumb and the pinky, and you put it into the solus, into the flour, into the carbon mincha, and you go and take out what's called the kmitza, a handful done in a certain way. You wipe off with the thumb the top, you wipe over the pinky the bottom, and that is known as a kmitza. That kmitza is then put into a kli shareis, and that's brought and sacrificed on the mizbeach. Now the remainder of that mincha is called the shrayim, the shiari mincha, and that is able to be eaten by the kohanim. But you only do this when a Yisrael brings a Korban Mincha. If a Kohen brings a Korban Mincha, so then there is no Kmitza, and the entire Korban Mincha is placed on the Mizbeach, and none of it is eaten by the Kohen. So this is what Rapapa tells us is a Chumrah for Yisrael. When it says, L'mincha Som, when they bring the Korban Mincha, so Nikmetzes Kimincha's Yisrael, so here this Sofek Kohen Sofek, the Eved Meshuchrar, so he wants to bring a Korban Mincha. So he brings a Korban Mincha. If he's a Kohen, he wouldn't take off the Kmitza. He would put the whole thing on the Mizbeach. But if he's a Yisrael, he has to go take off the Kmitza. The Kohen does all this avod, of course. The Kohen takes off the Kmitza, puts it on the Mizbeach, and then the rest is eaten by the Kohanim. So what do you do over here? So they have to do a Kmitza. Nikmetzes Kmincha's Yisrael. They do the Kmitza on it, and they put the Kmitza into a Klisharis and sacrifice that on the Mizbeach. But and the Shrayim, the Shiari Mincha, are not allowed to be eaten like they normally would, because maybe this is a Kohen's Mincha and none of it is eaten. So what do you do? What do you do with the Shrayim? HaKetzad? HaKometz Kari B'Yatzmo. So you take off the Kmitza and you put that up on the Mizbeach, you put it into Klisharis, you bring it up on the Mizbeach, and you sacrifice that. V'Hashrayim Kraven B'Yatzmo. And then the Shrayim, you go and sacrifice them by themselves. And Mimonoshach, we want to say, if it's the Shrayim of a Kohen, so you're sacrificing it up on the Mizbeach exactly as you're supposed to. So, no problem at all. But if it's the Kometz of Yisrael, so then it's supposed to be eaten. And you're not allowed to go bring it up on the Mizbeach. So, how are you allowed to go now and say, okay, it's not a Kometz called Biatzvo, Vashraim Krav Biatzvo, so that works out great if you're a Kohen. But it doesn't work out if you're a Yisrael. So where it says, Ikri Khan. So we have over here the principle, Kol Shem Emenu Le'ishim, Harehu B'Vak Takiru. How are you allowed to go and do this? Something that is not part of the original Kmitza is not allowed to go be brought on the Mizbeach. So how can you go and say, that big deal, if it's the Kohen's Karbin Mincha, so then the whole thing is supposed to be on the Mizbeach, and no problem in putting the Shiari HaMincha up on the Mizbeach, because there really was no Shiari HaMincha. But if it's a Yisrael, there is a problem putting up the Shiari Mincha on the Mizbeach. It's supposed to be eaten. And there's an issue of Baal Taktiru, something that is not supposed to be put up. They darshan the words, Kol Shem Menu Le'ishim. We darshan the Pasuk, Ki Chol Sor V'Chol Dvash Lo Saktiru Mimenu Yishen LaHashem. So we darshan that word, Mimenu, that you're not allowed to go and put up anything on the Mizbeach that's not supposed to be up on the Mizbeach. So if it's a Yisrael's Mincha, only the Kometz is supposed to be on the Mizbeach, and not the Shiraim. So how are you allowed to do this? So Mora tells us, I review the brother of Shimon Pazi. Review the son of Shimon Pazi tells us, the Masik Luhu Lushum Eitzim. This goes in accord with an opinion that we'll see in a moment is Rabbi Eliezer. And he says that when you put something up on the Mizbeach that you're not sure if it should be, so you basically make the following Tanai. If this is supposed to be on the Mizbeach, Gizuntei, I'm putting it up on the Mizbeach as I'm supposed to. And if not, then I'm not sacrificing it on the Mizbeach. I'm not being mocked to it on the Mizbeach. I'm putting it up as firewood. We know the Mizbeach needs to have firewood on it. So I'm using this as firewood. And therefore, there's not a prohibition of lo saktiru mimenu. And that's going in accord, as I just said, with the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. Now, the Gersa that we have is Rabbi Eliezer. Many, many times we find that Eliezer and Eliezer mixed up. And the editor of the Gemara of our Shas mixed them up. We know that this is supposed to be Rabbi Eliezer because we have this Gemara elsewhere where it's clearly called Rabbi Eliezer Shita. In any event, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, that when it says that you're not allowed to go bring up certain things on the Mizbeach, that it should be Yishel Hashem, so it means only if you're doing it for that purpose. But that's only L'Reach Nichoach, to go and put it up there as a Reach Nichoach, as something that will be pleasing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as part of the Avoda, so then you're not allowed to do this if it's not allowed to be up there. But you have to put firewood up on the Mizbeach, and therefore, if you're putting it up there as firewood, l'shun eitzim heter gomer. That's Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, and therefore that's why it's not a problem over here for a papa to say that if it's the mincha of Yisrael, so even though there's a shiari mincha that's not allowed to be put up there, we go according to the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer that says you can put it up there l'shun eitzim, and therefore mimar shach. If it was the coins mincha, it's put up there l'shem ishim, l'shem the rest of the shiari mincha being put up there and burnt because the entire coins mincha is burnt. And if it's really the Yisrael's mincha, it's the Eved Meshuchra's mincha, so then we're only putting up there the Shirayim, the Shem Eitzim. So what it says, obviously, that's great. Honicha, the Rabbi, again, the Gersa we have is Rabbi Lazar. It's always going to be here, Rabbi Eliezer. We're actually going to have a different Rabbi Lazar in a few moments. So Honicha, the Rabbi Eliezer, that works out great because he holds that you can put it up the Shem Eitzim. However, El the Rabbanim, who argue with him and don't allow you to put something up as the Shem Eitzim, if it's not supposed to be put up there, they don't allow it to be put up there, L'shun Eitzim. Michael and Amar, how are you going to get around this problem? So Mar says, not a problem. Because elsewhere, there's a machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and his son, Rabbi Elazar. Here it is, Rabbi Elazar. This is the famous Elazar of Shimon. Shimon's Rabbi Shimon of Yochai, and Elazar is the famous Elazar of Shimon, the son of Shimon. These are the two great Tanoim. They were in the cave for the first 12 years, and then for an additional 13th year. And this is Rabbi Shimon by Yochai, who is the author of the Zohar. This is this machlokas here between the father and the son. So, David Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. And here, our Gemara would have to go. If you're not holding like Rabbi Eliezer, that says you're allowed to put it up Shemetzim, you have to hold like Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, in a machlokas that he has with his father. What is that? The Tanya. This is in regard to a minchas chote. This Bryce is talking about the minchas chote of a Kohen. The minchas chote of a Kohen does in fact require kmitza. All the other menachos of a kohen don't require kmitza, but the minchas chote of a kohen does require kmitza. Now, both Rabbi Shimon and his son Elazar Shimon agree that this kohen's minchas chote does require kmitza, but they argue about what you do with it. Once you do the kmitza, so Rabbi Shimon holds, you burn them separately on the mizbeach. You put the kohen's kmitza on the mizbeach separately from the shiare minchas chote of the Kohen, but it also goes on the Mizbeach. But the son, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, disagrees with his father, and he says that you don't burn it on the Mizbeach. And so machlokas, Rashi and Tosos, where you burn it, either in a location that's in a certain part next to the Mizbeach or in a different part next to the Mizbeach, in any event, you don't put it up on the Mizbeach. So this is the machlokas between Rabbi Shimon, the father says you put up the mincha of the minchas chote of the Kohen on the Mizbeach, the Sharma put up there as well, and the son, Rabbi Elazar of Shimon, says you burn it next to the Mizbeach, in the place where you either burn the Trumas HaDeshen, or in a place where the Psulei HaKotchim were burned. In any event, this is what this price is telling us now. The Tanya, Rabbi Elazar of Shimon Omer, HaKomeitz Karev Liatzmo. The Kmitza has to be done separately in this situation of the Minchas Kohen, the Minchas Chote of the Kohen, Vashrayim Mispazrin HaBeis HaDeshen. And he says that you don't put the Shrayim up on the Mizbeach, you are Mefazer, you spread it out in the Beis HaDeshen, which, as I said, the Rashi holds is a place right next to the Mizbeach where they did the Trumas HaDeshen, where they put it there and a miracle occurred, it was swallowed up in that spot on the ground. Vafilu Rabbanan, now the Rabbanan here is his father, Vafilu Rabbi Shimon, his father, Lo Pligi Aleh, the Rabbi Elazar Shimon doesn't disagree with him in this regard, Ela B'Minchas Chote Shel Kohanim, the Bas HaKrovi, only in this situation where it's a minchas chote of a kohen, does he say it's a bas hakrava? But he says in every other place, Rabbi Shimon agrees that if it's not the Minchas Chote of a Kohen, which goes up on the Mizbeach, he agrees that every place else you put it by this Beis Hadeshen, the place where you go and take the Trumas Hadeshen and go and put it over there and it's swallowed up into the ground. So he agrees with that as well. So therefore, in our case, if you don't hold the Rebbe Elazar that says that you put it up L'shun Eitzim, so then you can hold like the opinion of the Chachamim and Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Shimon that in fact agree that you put it in the Beis Hadeshen. So that's what they would do over here as well, and everything is good. So you can learn a Mishnah like Rebbe Elazar, or you can learn a Mishnah like the Chachamim. Now we're going to the next Mishnah. Now for the next Mishnah, I have a very easy sheet as well. It's a handout that's attached to the dictation for today. And I think there are pictures in the article as well, but I think if we follow along with my diagrams, I think you'll find it very easy to understand my Mishnah. So we begin. The Mishnah says, Mishlo shos achaz ba'ala achar ba'ala shlosha chadashim. If a woman, we've learned previously the din of Havchana. If Rechmona Lassan, she's no longer married to her husband, either through divorce or through a death, or in any other situation where she had relations with a man, so she's supposed to wait 3 months, what's called the period of Havchana, to make sure she's not pregnant from that man, and this is where we know who the father of the child is. Because they used to have in those days a 7-month gestation and a 9-month gestation. And if the woman were to get married right away, and then she'd give birth 7 months later, so in that situation, we wouldn't be sure, is this a child to the second husband, or is it a child from the first husband? So in this situation, we say wait 3 months, and then vadai, if the child is born within the first 6 months of the second marriage, so obviously it comes from the first husband. But if it's born after that, it obviously can't come from the first husband because there's no such thing as longer than a 9-month gestation, so therefore the child must be from the second husband. So this way, this havchana period of time will distinguish and allow us to know who the father of the child is. So in our Mishnah, Mishalo Shoaso Achar Balo Shlosh Kodashim, a woman did not wait the 3-month Havchana period of time. The Nisses, she got married sooner, and then the Yalda, and she gave birth. And we don't know now, if it's a 9-month gestation from the first husband, then Ben Shiva Le'achar, or it's a valid, viable 7-month gestation from the second husband. Again, we pointed out, there's 2 different gestations. 8-month is premature, can never survive in the times of the Gemara. But 7-month was a separate gestation that could survive. So in any event, we have over here, we don't know the lineage of this child. So here we have that now we're dealing where this woman has children other than the Suffolk child, which in my diagram I call Shimon. We don't know who Shimon's father is. Was it the first husband? Was it the second husband? And she had separately a child from the first husband, whose name was Levi, and she has a child from the second husband, who I named Reuven. So these children are now going to be full maternal brothers with Shimon. But they're not going to be paternal brothers with Shimon on a vade basis. It's certainly Shimon is a paternal brother with either Levi or with Reuven. Those are the only 2 options, but it's not a vade with either one. So they definitely have the same mother. All of them all have the same mother, but Shimon may be the paternal brother as well with Levi, or he might be the paternal brother of Reuven, but not both. So in this situation, the Mishnah tells us, when she has these other children from her first and second husband, chol tzivlo miyabin. If Rechmon l'slan Shimon dies and he dies childless, so his wife falls yibam. But who she fall yibam to? Maybe she falls yibam to Levi. Maybe that's the paternal brother. Or maybe she falls yibam to Reuven. That's the paternal brother. We don't know. So therefore, in order for her to marry somebody, she can't marry Levi because it may be that she really is a Shomeris Yavam and she's supposed to marry Reuven. She's not Muteris to marry Levi, or vice versa. She's really supposed to have Yibam with Levi and therefore she can't marry Reuven. So therefore, we're stuck and each of them has to give a chalitza, choltiv lo b'yabim, because of the concern that the other one really is the one that was supposed to have Yibam, and even if that one gave chalitza, she's not Muteris to the other half-brother because it's a half-brother min ha'aim. Certainly, in that situation, it's Eishes Achiv Shelo B'Vaku Mitzvah, which is, again, a forbidden Arayis relationship. So therefore, she can't have Yibam with either of them and needs Chalitza with both of them in order to be Muteris L'Shuk. Fine. And then where it says, V'chein Hu Lahem. Same thing would apply if both Levi and Reuven were to pass away and their wives would fall Yibam to Shimon. Possibly. Maybe, in fact, Levi's wife should fall Yibam to Shimon, but maybe not. Now, if Levi's wife is in fact Mechuyeves and Yibam to Shimon, he can't do it because maybe she's not, and then it's, again, Eishes Achiv Shelo B'Malka Mitzvah. So he has to give a Chalitza. And the same thing has to do with Reuven's wife. He can't do Yibam because maybe it's Eishes Ach Shelo B'Makom Mitzvah because it's only a maternal brother and not a paternal brother. But he can't let it go scot-free because maybe it really is a paternal brother and she requires Yibam Mechalitza to be Materis L'Shot. So therefore, he has to do as well. V'chein Hu Lahem, he has to get both in the Mechalitza. Choleitz V'lo Miyabim. Now, my sheet, I explain this a little bit more in detail. See it over there. Then, we turn to Kuf Amud Beis. The Mishnah continues and says, what happens, expanding upon this first case, if we add on to both her first and second husband a previous wife? So, in this situation, the first husband had a previous wife, and the second husband also had a previous wife, and each of them respectively had a child. So, the first husband's previous wife gave them a child by the name of Aaron, who got married, and the second husband had a previous wife who had a child, Moshe, who also had a wife. Now, same thing happens over here. She is no longer married to husband number one. Tomorrow we'll discuss exactly what happened to husband number one. The simple assumption over here is that he died, but we'll talk about it in a situation that it's not actually that he died. But in any event, she's no longer married to husband number one, and she marries husband number two. And now, again, the same scenarios occur as in the first set of circumstances. So, now, Aaron is totally unrelated to Shimon, except possibly through the father. They may share the same father. Otherwise, they have no maternal connection. Likewise, Shimon is totally unrelated maternally to Moshe. He may have the same father. So there's, again, this suspicion or the question, is Shimon a half-paternal brother of Aaron, or is he a half-paternal brother of Moshe? He definitely is one of them a half-paternal brother, but not to both of them. Now, what happens in this situation if both Aaron and Moshe die childless? So then their respective wives would fall Yibam to Shimon. Here, in this situation, who cholates umiyabim, he has a choice of either doing Yibam or Chalitza with each one. Now, we're dealing here, as Rashi and Tosfos both point out, that there are no other brothers. If there are other brothers involved, if Aaron had another paternal brother, Moshe had another paternal brother, then obviously they would be required, because there's no suffix there, so they would be required to once do Yibam or Chalitza. But let's assume now there are no other brothers. So when Aaron passes away, his wife falls in Yibam to Shimon, 50% likelihood. We don't know, is he a paternal brother or not to Aaron? We don't know, yes or no. Let's make a 50% chance. In this event, if she in fact falls to him in Yibam, very good. He does Yibam with her, or Chalitza, and he fulfills that mitzvah. If in fact she's not his sister-in-law, in fact Aaron and Shimon are not related, so then she's Muteris L'Shut, there are no other brothers, and he's allowed to marry her as a woman who's Muteris L'Shut. So Shimon can do either Yibam or Chalitza with Aaron's wife with no problems. And the same exact scenario with Moshe's wife. Either he's Moshe's half-brother, and she falls Yibam to him, and he can do Yibam Chalitza, or they're totally unrelated. They don't have the same father, and they certainly don't have the same mother, and therefore, she's Muteris L'Shuk, because there are no other brothers, and he can marry her as a woman who's Muteris L'Shuk. So that's what the Mishnah is telling us, who Choleitz Miyabim. He has a choice to be Choleitz or Miyabim, either one of them, or both of them. The Haim, however, if Shimon's the one that dies childless, in this situation, you have to do it in the following order. Echad choleitz v'echad miyabim. One of them first has to do chalitza with her. So let's make it that Aaron first does chalitza with Shimon's wife. Shimon dies, Aaron may be the half-brother, so she may fall in Yibam to him. So he can't do Yibam to her because maybe she's still zukuka to Moshe, because really Moshe's the half-brother. So he can't do Yibam to her because he's not Muteris L'Shuk. Therefore, he has to do chalitza with her. Mimanashach, if he was the half-brother, so then the chalitza is a valid chalitza. If he's not their brother, so big deal. She had chalitza, no harm done. Then Moshe can go and marry her, Yibam or chalitza. He has to do something with her because maybe she wasn't parted by the chalitza of Aaron. So maybe she's still zukuka to Moshe. So now Moshe has no problems. If Moshe is the half-brother, so he does Yibam or chalitza with her, whatever he would like. He certainly can do Yibam if he wants. Maybe she's not his half-brother. Maybe Shimon wasn't his half-brother, and therefore she's not his sister-in-law. No problem. She's Muteris L'Shuk because she got Chalitza from the real half-brother, Aaron, from the paternal brother Aaron to her husband Shimon. And therefore, she can marry the second one. Again, it doesn't make a difference whether Aaron goes first or Moshe goes first. Whichever one goes first has to do Chalitza, and the second one can do Yibam or Chalitza. That's what the Mishnah tells us. Hey, Echad Cholitz first, the Echad Miyam, and the other one can do Yibam. Of course, he can do Chalitza as well. Now we have another variation of this, but we don't need my sheet anymore. If in fact you have over here that this Taruves with the parents over here, one of them was a Kohen, and the other is a Yisrael in this situation. So we don't know the Sofik Shimon. We don't know his status. Is he a Yisrael? Is he a Kohen? So he's only allowed to marry people that a Kohen can marry. No Seisha, Ruyul a Kohen. He can't marry a Grusha. He can't marry a Zona. He has to marry a woman who's Ruyul a Kohen. Maybe he's a Kohen. Maybe he's not. He can't take any chances. We have to take the stringencies of being a Kohen, so he's not allowed to be Matami Mes, except to the Zion Krovim. But to somebody else, a friend, to be a part of Chevy Chadisha, he can't go and do that. Ain't a Matami Mes. Likewise, the Enitma, if he did become Matami Mes intentionally, ain't a Sofik is surviving. He doesn't get Malkus because he can argue, prove to me I'm a Kohen, then he can give me Malkus. But since you can't prove to me I'm a Kohen, I don't get Malkus. So again, he shouldn't be Matami, but if he was Matami intentionally, he doesn't get Malkus. Likewise, ain't Ochel B'Truma. He's not a Kohen, possibly. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't, but therefore we don't let him eat Truma. But if he again ate Truma, v'im Ochal, so then, in Mishal and Karen Chomesh, he doesn't have to go pay back the Karen and the Chomesh, because he can argue, Hamos Mechmer, all of a Raya, prove to me that I'm not a Kohen, and then I'll pay the Karen and the Chomesh. Now again, if it belonged to somebody else, he has to pay back the Karen. But here we're talking about the Truma didn't belong to somebody else, so then he doesn't have to pay Karen or Chomesh. Likewise, Menacholi Kalagorin, he's not entitled to a portion by the Goren, by the granary, that go and ask for Truma, because maybe he's not a Kohen, and therefore they can't give him Truma at the granary. Umocher had Truma v'adomim shalom. But if he has Truma, he's mafresh his own Truma. He has to be mafresh it, otherwise, as we pointed out, it's tevel, even a Kohen can eat tevel. But he's mafresh it, but now he can sell it to the Kohen. Umocher had Truma v'adomim shalom. He gets to sell it to the Kohen because he can say to the Kohen, it's my Truma. Okay, I can't eat it, so I'll sell it to you. And therefore, the other Kohen buys it from him and he gets to keep the money. The Kohen that sold it, this Sofik Kohen, gets to keep the proceeds. Then, Ve'eno Cholek, Bekodshe. Now, the Gisa, we have a Kodoshim, and it's not incorrect, but we'll keep it to be in exactly the same as the Gisa from the previous Mishnah we discussed, and the Gisa elsewhere is Ve'eno Cholek, Bekodshe Hamikdosh. He's not entitled to get the oros, the hides, from the Kochi Kedoshim. That's why the Gersa of the Kochi Kedoshim is probably correct, because he's not entitled to get the hides of the animals that the Kohanim get when the Baalim bring them, so the Kohanim get to keep the hides. So if a Baal brings a carbonola, so the Kohen gets to keep the hide. That's what it means. So the Kohanim on their Nishmar, they get to keep the hides, and they don't have to give him one. He's not entitled to get the hide. They know they likewise, they don't give him kachim. So, for example, a Bechor or a Cherim, which goes to the Kohanim, so they don't, he's not entitled to go and take those things as well. However, but if he has his own kachim, nobody can take them away from him. Because if he brings a carbon, he can say, I'm entitled to the hide. A Kohen that brings a carbon is entitled to keep the hide himself. So here he's allowed to say, I'm keeping the hide, and you're not allowed to go take it from me. I'm going to keep my Bechor, and you can't take it from me. And likewise, upato min hazroa v'alachayim v'keva. Likewise, these presents that are part of the Matnus Kahuna, the 24 Matnus Kahuna, include the zroa l'chayim and the keva. So he shechts an animal, chulin, which normally you have to give these matanus, the zroa l'chayim and the keva, the right forearm, the jawbone area, and the part of the stomach has to be given as Matnus Kahuna to the Kohen. So he can say to the Kohen, listen, I'm a Kohen too. And hamos b'chaber l'varayim, prove to me that I'm not a Kohen, and then you get it. Otherwise, I keep it for myself. Likewise, if he has a Bechor, if he has a firstborn male animal, if he's not allowed to bring it as a carbon, because only a Kohen can bring it as a carbon, only a Kohanim are allowed to eat from it. But in this situation, he is allowed to keep it for himself, wait till it gets a mum, then it's going to no longer be able to be brought as a carbon, and you shecht it as a barbecue, as chulin. So he's allowed to keep it for himself. Furthermore, the nosin lav chumrei kohanim v'chumrei yisraelim, we keep upon himself the chumras of both a kohen and a yisrael. We just learned earlier in the shiur today that this means if he brings a korban mincha, so the shrayim are not eaten by the kohanim like it normally would be by yisrael. We have to assume that he's a kohen and he can't eat the shrayim, but at the same time, the shrayim are not allowed to be brought on the mizbeach if it's a yisrael. So therefore, we have to either put it on L'shum Eitzim, like Rabbi Eliezer said, or we put it in the Beis Hadeshen, where the true Beis Hadeshen, like Rashi said, is normally put, and that's what you do with it. So it has the Chumrah of Yisrael, as well as the Chumrah of all the other Chumrahs we talk about for being a Kohen. Now, the next scenario is Hayushneim Kohanim. Husband number one and husband number two are both Kohanim. In this situation, Hu Onen Aleim. He goes and is an Onen for them. Rahman al-Islam, when they die, so all the dinim of Aninus come, which means, essentially, that he's not allowed to eat kachim during that period of time, and he's not allowed to do the avoda. Now, the Gemara will talk about, wait a second, if the first husband died, and that's why she got married to the second husband, but within a 3-month period of time, so then how would he be an onan for the first husband? Under what circumstances could he be an onan for the first husband? So tomorrow we'll talk about that. In any event, the war continues, v'heim onanim alav, that both of the husbands would be an onan on him. So if Shimon passes away, so husband number one, the Kohen, and husband number two, the Kohen, both of them would be an aninus for him, and wouldn't be able to do the avodah, wouldn't be able to be kachim during that period of time that they're owning him. Again, the Gemara is going to discuss, how could that possibly be that husband number one is still alive? Didn't husband number one die? So how could husband number one be an onan on his son if he died? Okay, well, we'll discuss this in the Gemara. Finally, who eino mitami lehem? This son, Shimon, the suffix son, is not allowed to be mitami to either of the fathers, because it's only a suffix that it's his father, albeit there is no suffix that he's a Kohen. He's a Vade Kohen. He's either a Kohen, the son of number one, or a Kohen, the son of number two. But since it's only a suffix that number one is his father, only a suffix that number two is his father, he's not allowed to be mitami for them. And likewise, Mehem ain't a mitami lo. They can't be mitami for him, because they're both Vade Kohanim, and they're not allowed to be mitami to somebody who's not one of the Vade Zayin Krovin. Furthermore, who ain't a Yorei Shel son? He doesn't go and inherit either of them. Now, there's two possibilities over here. If there are other children, like we have in the case where there's an Aaron and a Moshe, so Aaron can go tell Shimon, I'm Vadai the son of husband number one. You're only a suffix son, so prove to me that you're a Vadai son and you'll share the Yerusha with me. And same thing, Moshe can say to Shimon, I'm a Vadai son, you're only a suffix son, so therefore you don't get to inherit with us. So it's clear that that's the halacha if there are additional sons to husband number one, husband number two. The question the post can discuss is, what happens if there are no sons? So there is only a uncle, let's say. So the uncle wants to tell Shimon, well, I'm a Vadai uncle, and therefore I inherit, and you're only a suffix, you don't inherit. That's what some of the post can say. Other post can say, no, Shimon can tell to him, listen, if I'm a son, you don't get anything. So you're only a suffix Yorish as well. So we have to split it in that situation. So this is a machlokus amongst the post can. What happens if there are no brothers? But in the case where there's an Aaron, there's a Moshe, so then they definitely inherit, and he gets nothing. And that's what it means, who ain't a Yorishel son. Aval heim, Yorishel osel, but they both inherit him. Aaron and Moshe, when Shimon would pass away, and he has no children, obviously, so then the Yerusha goes up to the father. Now, we don't know the father is husband number one or father husband number two, so therefore it's Momon Hamutol b'safek. It's unclear who it goes to, and they split it, Cholkin. Okay, Aval heim, Yorishel osel, each of them will get 50%. If a person hits his father or curses his father, so that's a terrible thing. It's an Isser of Misa. Nevertheless, in this situation, he's not sure that it's his father, husband number one. Husband number two is not sure that it's his father, so Shimon wouldn't be Chayim Misa. Terrible thing to do. He shouldn't do this, but he wouldn't be Chayim Misa on hitting his father or cursing his father because he's not sure that this is this person's father. Again, he absolutely shouldn't do this. Likewise, he's definitely a Kohen, so Ola b'mishvar v'shozeh, they cannot stop him from going to work. The Kohanim would divide up into 24 mishmaros. So let's say husband number one was mishra number one, husband number two was mishra number two. So Shimon the son can go and work, do the avoda with the Kohanim and mishra number one. They can't push him aside. Rashi explains, because this is a mitzvah. They can't push him aside from doing a mitzvah. And likewise, when he goes with mishra number two, so from husband number two, they can't push him aside. However, but he's not entitled to get a portion. Normally, the Mishmar divides up all the korbanos, the hides and the meats, and they divide them up. He's not entitled to a portion. That they can say, prove to us that you're in this Mishmar, and we'll give it to you. To do the mitzvah, they can't say, but to divide up the booty, so to say, to divide up the hides and the meat that the Kohanim, the Pirchekun, are allowed to eat, so that he's not entitled to a portion, However, if both husband number one and husband number two were from the same mishmar, if you stand by mishmar echad, so then no tel chelik echad. Then he is entitled to take one portion. He can say mimarushach. If I'm the son of husband number one, I'm entitled. If I'm the son of husband number two, I'm entitled. So therefore, you can't push me aside. 100% I'm entitled. So therefore, he gets one portion like everybody else. Okay, that's our Mishnah. Mar starts off and says dafko michlatz v'hadivumei. Again, I made it a big point to say that in the scenario where Shimon dies and Ari and Moshe go and the wife of Shimon falls Yibam to one of the two of them. So the first one must do Chalitza. So we said, let's say Aaron is the first one, so he does Chalitza. And then Moshe has the right to be Miyabim or to do Chalitza. But it has to be Dafka in that order. Dafka, Michlatz, Vada, Yehume. Why? Ava Yehume, Bereisha, Lo, because the Kopaga, Yibam, Lashuk, as I pointed out. If Aaron were to want to do Yibam first, so then maybe that's an appropriate yibam. But maybe, really, the wife of Shimon is zakuka to Moshe, and therefore, she's not muteris lashor, and therefore, Aaron is going to marry somebody who's a zakuka liyavim, and that's not allowed. Rabbi Shmuel, now tells us another din. Asar kohanim om din. If you have 10 kohanim, vadei kohanim, that are all together, and pirish echemihem, one of them leaves that group, ubal, and goes and has relations with a woman, we don't know which one of them did, and that woman is a kashura woman, she's a pnuya, but she's not a zona, she's not a woman who's a halala, so then, havlad shtuki. Nevertheless, that child is considered a shtuki. Shtuki means shtok. We tell the child silent when he says, is this my father? Is this my father? Or he calls somebody daddy, and we say, silent, that's not your father. Now, we know for a fact that the father of this child is one of 10 kosher kohanim. So the Gemara says, my shtuki, why do you call him shtuki? If you tell me that he's not entitled to inherit that kohen, if all 10 of these kohanim die, he wants to go to each of them and say, I'm entitled to a portion. Or if one of them dies, he wants to go to him and say, I'm entitled to a portion. I may be your son. Shita, that's obviously clear. Nobody knows whose father is. They're all going to push him aside and say, you're not entitled to anything. So what does it mean, shtuki? Elo, shemishaskin oso midin kuna. Can it tell me it means that he's not a kohen? Why is that? My taima. On my kra. Because the pasuk says, oisalo zaro acharov. The pasuk tells us that you'll be a kohen, luzaro acharov, and all your children after you will be kohanim. What does that mean? Beinon zaro miyuchas acharov. That you specifically need zaro that is miyuchas, that is specific to you. And in this situation, Vileka, we don't know who the father is. So the words Zaro Acharov come to tell us you must know who your father is. It's not enough to know that your father's a Kohen. That's why Mishatsky was told that he doesn't get to work as a Kohen. Rapapa questions this. Maskal Rapapa, really? Elamiyatu Gabiyabra, by Avram Avinu, it says, Dersim, Yosechol Elokim Uzaracha Acharecha. He's also using this Lashon, Uzaracha Acharecha. What does that mean? Hasa Maikom Azel, Loho Rechmana. What is the Torah telling us? That if you don't know for a fact who your father is, you're not a Yid? That can't be. So the Gemara says, Hachi Karmali, this is what HaKadosh Baruch was telling Avraham Avinu. Lo tinsav ovedes kochavim v'shivcha, lo lezil zarecha basra. That pasuk is telling us, liyosuchol elkim uzarecha acharecha, that if you want your zarecha to go after you, don't marry a goita. If you marry a goita, if you marry an ovedes kochavim, or you marry a shivcha, so the child goes after the mother. And therefore, in that situation, you won't have Zaracha Acharecha. So therefore, Lod Lezel Zaracha Basra. Don't go marry her so that the lineage goes after her and not after you. Marry a Yid, and this way the child will go after you. Marcel questions this. It says, Meisvei Rishon Roilios Koin Godo. We have a situation where they didn't wait for the Havchana period of time. So we learned early in the Masechta that the child that's born from that, the first husband was a Kohen, second husband was a Kohen. So this child, when he grows up, could be the Kohen Gadol. Rishon Roy Leo's Kohen Gadol. The first child that's born there is Roy to be a Kohen Gadol. Now, if yours, what you're saying is correct, that it has to be a miyuchastik a Kohen, then you have to know who the father is. So then how can this child be a Kohen Gadol, the Lekko, he doesn't know who his father is? So I says, no. Zaro miyuchas achrov is only a din derabbanan. Therefore, this is not an absolute direct drasha from the Torah. I, the pasuk, v'hoyselo zaro acharav, that's just an asmachto, cross smachto b'yalma. It's just an allusion to this idea. I, and when would the chachamim go? V'chigozu rabbonu biznos, in a situation where there was 10 kohanim, one of them had a mezana with this woman, so that's a case of znos. The chacham said, what goes in there, that you don't have your status of being a kohen, you're not a miyuchastik a kohen. And it's a din derabbanan. However, if it wasn't biznos b'nisuin, in our case with the havchana, she got married to the second husband, it just was, you didn't wait the havchana period of time, so it's not dealing with biznos, so b'nisuin, lo gozer rabbanan. The rabbis never made the gzeir in that situation, that's why the child could be the kohen gadol. More questions, as it says, really? U'biznos b'gozer rabbanan? In the case of biznos, the rabbis made this gzeir, is that what you're saying? But not our Mishnah. We learned that it's not true. Mishlo shosa achabal shloshe chadashim v'niseis v'yolda. Our Mishnah gave us the case, the woman didn't wait 3 months, and she remarried within the 3 month period of time. Now, what was our case? This is what I alluded to before. We assumed that the husband died, but we'll see now that that's not the case. My achar bala. It says she didn't wait, lo shasa achar bala shlosh kadosh. She went after the death of her husband. That's the way we first understood it. We didn't wait after the death of her husband for 3 months. So if you're going to tell me, yes, we're talking about the death of her husband. So then keep on reading. Ema Seifa, it said, Hu onen alehem, v'heim onen malav. So we said in that situation, this suffix, Shimon, the child, maybe the child of husband one, maybe the child of husband two, so he has to have aninus for both of them, and both of them, husband one and one, husband number two, have aninus for him. So Bishlam Hu onen alehem, we can understand the scenario where the child could be onen for both husband number one and husband two. Now how could that be? Husband number one is dead. So Mishkachas law, Binisu and Disheni, the second husband, that certainly is possible. If he dies, the child is born. So certainly the child would have aninus after the second husband, no problem. But then when we have it by the first husband, the Likuratsomus de Kama, that could be the scenario by the first husband. He died, yes, before the child was born, and now they're gathering up his bones, and on the day that you gather up the bones, there's a din of aninus. So they're gathering up his bones from place one to bury it in the family plot, place two. So therefore, even though the father died, husband number one died, the possible father number one died before the birth of the Suffolk Shimon, he could still have aninus for his father when they collect the bones. Fine. Elo, heim onin malav, heichem mishkachso, but how could it be that husband number one is an onin for this child? If he died first, how could that possibly be? Come on, who may slay? The first husband was saying died. So obviously, the first husband's marriage did not end with death. I, Bella Begrusha, you're telling me that husband number one divorced the wife and she didn't wait 3 months. She then married husband number two. Is that the case? That can't be either. Umay acha bala, what are you telling me? It means acha get bala? It means after the get of her husband? Husband number one gave her a get? That can't be. Ain't no safer. Keep on reading. Who ain't matami lahem? This child, the suffix, is not allowed to be matami for father number one or father number two, husband number one, husband number two, because he's a vade kohen and they are not vade his father. The heim ain't matami lo, same thing, because they're vade kohanim, but he may not be their vade son. So Gemara says, Bishlama hein ein metamim lo. We understand why both husband number one, husband number two can't be metamim to him because they're both kohanim and luchumra. So they have to go to luchumra. Maybe this is not their child and they can't be metamim to him. They call chad v'chad dilma labreyu because it's not his child possibly. However, how can it be that he can't be metamim to husband number one? Elohu ein metamim lehem, that we said in the Mishnah that he can't be metamim to them. Amai, why not? After all, Bishlomo Lasheni lo mitami le. We can understand why husband number two he can't be mitami to, because maybe he's a kohen, the son of husband number one, and he's not allowed to be mitami to husband number two because husband number two is not his father. Okay, that we understand. Ella lo rishon. Why can't this suffix Shimon, this suffix child Shimon, be mitami to husband number one? Why? Ella lo rishon latami le mimonoshach. We can say mimonoshach, he's allowed to be mitami to him. If it's his father, Ibrehu, Shapar komentamile, he's allowed to be mitami to his father. No problem. But you're telling me he's really the son of husband number two. Husband number two married a grusha. The Ibar Basrahu, if he's the husband of the second son, so guess what? The second husband married a grusha. Shapar komentamile, he's a cholo, and he's allowed to be mitami to husband number one. The cholohu, he's a cholo, and as a result, he doesn't have the dinim of kahuna. And he's like a Yisrael, and there's no problem. So mimonoshach, if husband number one was his father, boom, he's allowed to be mitami to him. And if husband number one is not his father, so guess what? Husband number two married a grusha. Therefore, this progeny, this Shimon, who's now really the son of husband number two, is a cholo, and he can be mitami to husband number one. So mimonoshach, that's what he should do. So the Gemara says, you know how this marriage ended from one that she went and married husband number two? Elav b'znus. We're dealing over here with znus. She had an illegitimate relationship with husband number one, which didn't make her into a zona, and she's allowed to marry husband number two. But after having had relations with husband number one, she was supposed to wait 3 months, and she didn't. And what does it mean? Umay achar bala means achar boala. She didn't wait the 3 months after having relations with husband number one. It wasn't husband number one. It was boala, the man she had relations with. And now, v'ketani seifa, ola b'mishbar shozeh v'shozeh. And yet we see that we don't make a knas over here. We see that we don't make a gzeir over here, like Shmuel said, with the 10 kohanim when one went and had relations with her. We see that he is still considered a miyuchastik a kohen. And ola b'mishbar shozeh v'shozeh. Tiyufta de Shmuel. And this is a question on Shmuel's statement. So I'm Rishmaya says, you know what we're dealing with over here? Bimimah Nanes. We're dealing over here with a woman who didn't have a marriage d'oraisa, surely a marriage d'rabbanan. And a marriage d'rabbanan, when her older brothers or her mother married her off after the death of her father, so the rabbis gave permission to do this because they couldn't support the child, so they allowed her to be married off by the rabbanan. But in this d'rabbanan marriage, she's allowed to walk away at any point before she's a gedola. She can walk away from the marriage without needing a get. Therefore, she's not a grusha, but she did have relations with husband number one, and that's how you can have a husband number one and a husband number two without it being a cholo. Gemara doesn't like this tarot. Gemara says, really? Mimamenes, miko yalda. Wait a second. If she was a mamenes, that means she's a young girl. She's not yet a gedola. And a young girl cannot give birth. So then it wouldn't be a suffix. Is she the child of husband number one or husband number two? Couldn't be the child of husband one because she was a katana. Because only a katana can be mimamenes. Where do we see this? Vatani Rabibi, Kameh, the Rav Nachman. Rabibi said in front of Rav Nachman, Shalosh Noshi Misham Shalosh B'moch. There are three women that are allowed to use a certain type of contraception known as a moch. Basically, you put something inside Osam Akam that will absorb the zera of the husband, and this way the woman won't get pregnant. So there are three women that are allowed to use this contraceptive type of a sponge in order to prevent pregnancy. What are these three women? A katana, a woman who's younger than 12 years old, Muberes, a woman who's already pregnant, Manika, a woman who's nursing. Why are all these three allowed to use contraception? So the statement from Rabibi continues, and he says, katana, the reason why we don't let a katana get pregnant is Shemotis Abe Betomos, because if she's a very young girl and she were to get pregnant, she could possibly die from the pregnancy. Now this is actually medically correct. Younger girls, not ketanos in the halachic sense, but younger girls, 12, 13, 14-year-old girls who get pregnant are at higher risk than a more mature woman. So we understand, Shema Tisabe V'tobah, so we don't want her to get pregnant. Muberes, if she's already pregnant, it is possible, rarely, for a woman to get pregnant again. So therefore, they would use this moch, according to Rabibi, because Shema Tase Ubrasanda, because she'll get pregnant again, and the second pregnancy will destroy the first pregnancy. So therefore, we don't want her to get pregnant. Manika, nursing mother, because if she gets pregnant again, it is possible sometimes, while the nursing is a great contraceptive in and of itself, it's not perfect. So Shema Tigmol is Minah, she'll have to wean off her child because she won't be producing milk anymore because she's pregnant. V'yamas, and the child will die. They didn't have formula those days. Or it's like nowadays where there's a formula shortage. And Rachmona Litzlan, the child will die from not having any food. And how do we define katana? Rabibi continues, Vezi katana, Mibas achas esrei shonav yomechad. Ad bashtem esrei shonav yomechad. From 11 years old in one day to 12 years old in one day, that's the katana that Rabibi is talking about. Because pachs v'kan, less than 11 years old in one day, more than 12 years old in one day, mishameshes kedarek avolechas. Divrei Rebbeir, she's allowed to go and have regular relations because less than 11 years old one day, there's no way she'll get pregnant. And more than 12 years old one day, it'll be a normal pregnancy. So therefore, Rebbeir holds, in those situations, she doesn't need to use contraception. But if she's between 11 and 12, that's what Rameh says, she can use a moch. The Chachamim disagree. Chachamim, no. In all of these scenarios that Rameh brought down, achazu, yachazu, whether she's a katana, 11 to 12, whether she's muberes, she's pregnant, or whether minika, she's nursing, the Chachamim say you can rely that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will protect her. Mishamesh is kedar kavo leches, umin ha-shamayim irachamei. That in Shemayim, they'll have mercy on her, and they won't cause any trouble. And this is a principle, a halachic principle. If it's something that's a normally accepted risk, Hashem will protect you. A person doesn't have to go and be choshesh. I can't take a shower. I might slip in the shower. I can't cross the street. I could get hit by a car. These are normal activities of life. And we have the principle, shomer b'sam Hashem. It doesn't mean that nobody will ever chas v'shalom get hurt. But it means that a person has the halachic right to go and take these risks. So the Chacham say, these three women, the Ketana, Muberes, and Manika, are halachically not allowed to use contraception. They have the halachic right to rely upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu to make sure that the pregnancy comes through normally. Now, you see from this that a child cannot get pregnant. Either she uses a moch, or that they don't get pregnant at that age and time. They're going to die if they get pregnant, Rachmona Litzlan. So, in that situation, how can we say that this mamenis possibly had a child from husband number one? So that can't be it. So Gemara answers, you know what we're dealing with over here? How could it be that she had husband number one, husband number two, without it being miso, grusho, or mamenes? Mishkachas lo b'kidushei tos. She had a mistaken marriage with husband number one. She's a gedola. She could have gotten pregnant. And there was some mekach tos over here, uchtu Rabbi Yehuda Mershmul, who said, don't Rabbi Yehuda Mershmul, mishum mishmol, v'hi lo nispasa. In a situation where the woman had relations with a man and she wasn't assaulted, he lo nispasa, so then asura, then she's no longer allowed to stay with her husband because she was mezana. Implication being, if she was assaulted, she was forced to have it, so then if the husband's a Yisrael, Multeri, she's allowed to stay with him. And V'yesh l'cho acheres, there's also another woman, which says V'hi lo nisposa, tells us another woman as well. What is that? Shafa b'shal lo nisposa, even though she wasn't forced, she voluntarily had relations, nevertheless she can stay with her husband, Multeri. And who is this? They zo. Who is this woman? She kidushe tos. If a woman had, in fact, a kidushe tos, it was a mekach tos over here, shafilu b'no amurkav lo aksefa, even if she has a child with that man, now here, mamenes doesn't mean she needs to do mian. She's a gedola. There is no din of mian. It basically is borrowing this phrase that she just walks away from the marriage and she doesn't need to get. So that's what happened with husband number one. It was a mekach tos. So she could have had a child with him, and she should have waited 3 months till after that marriage was complete, even though it wasn't a halachic marriage, until after her last bia with him was complete, so we would know the havchana. But therefore, that's what we're talking about. That's why she's not, when she marries husband number two, turning the children into a halal, because it's a permitted marriage, and therefore that's how you can have husband number one being alive and husband number two still being alive, and there's no gerish and there's no concern of halala, and we're obviously dealing with it, he's still alive, and this is the scenario. This was a tough shiur. This is a good break point. Even though we're near the end of the parak, we'll stop over here. With this, we conclude today's shiur.